For only the third time in history, an impeachment trial against an American president is now underway. The Senate is preparing to hear why the Democrat-led House of Representatives has charged Donald Trump with high crimes and misdemeanors. But already, Democrats and Republicans have clashed over the trial, with Democrats strongly objecting to rules proposed by the Republican leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, for a speedy trial.
If Senator McConnell makes this the first impeachment trial in history without witnesses or documents, it will not prove the president innocent. It will merely prove the Senate guilty of working with the president to obstruct the truth from coming out.
That's the House impeachment manager, Democrat Adam Schiff. The US president was last month impeached on two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, relating to accusations that he posed a national security threat in his conduct towards Ukraine. Frank Bowman is law professor at the University of Missouri and author of the book High Crimes and Misdemeanors, A History of Impeachment for the Age of Trump, and he joins me now. Welcome to RN Breakfast, Frank Bowman.
Thank you for having me.
So we heard there from Adam Schiff condemning the rules recommended by the Republicans. What exactly is Mitch McConnell proposing?
He's proposing something which doesn't look like a trial in any sense that would be recognizable in the Anglo-American world. That is to say, these rules would propose the following stages. First, there would be a period in which the House managers, that is to say the representatives, the House of Representatives who act as the prosecutors and the president's lawyers, simply give what amount would amount to sort of extended opening statements over a period of roughly 4 days of 12-hour days apiece, following which there would be an opportunity for senators to ask written questions. But in none of those phases would there actually be the presentation of any witnesses or the introduction of any documents, some of which are plainly missing because President Trump has refused to provide them. Only after these opening statements and senatorial questions would there even be an opportunity for the Senate to consider whether witnesses and exhibits should be called. And the rules are rigged in such a way that the senators wouldn't even necessarily have to explain why they didn't want to have witnesses or exhibits. They could simply vote the whole question out of order on about the fifth or sixth day of the trial.
So go on.
No, well, and the whole the timeline of the thing is transparently an effort to rush the thing through before a significant event in the American political year, Mr. Trump's State of the Union appearance, where he gives a speech in front of Congress. The whole thing is set up so that the Senate, dominated by Republicans, would essentially be able to acquit him by the day before the speech, so he could come in and claim his exoneration. It's really quite comical.
And so they're not front-loading. I mean, one of the key issues here is they're not front-loading the question about witnesses. That's going to be right in the middle of the process.
Right. I mean, for those of your listeners who may have some basic familiarity with trials, I mean, this is essentially like telling the lawyers in a regular trial that you have to give your opening statements first before we even tell you what evidence you're going to be allowed to admit. And it's really quite preposterous.
What's the role of Chief Justice Roberts here? I mean, he's presiding. He has no say in all this. This is a purely political process. I mean, he's supposed to be the judge in this.
Well, he's not really a judge in the normal sense. He presides over only impeachments of presidents. All other kinds of impeachments of all other kinds of officials are presided over by either the vice president of the United States or the so-called president pro tem of the Senate. Chief Justice Roberts is merely there because it would be a conflict of interest to have the vice president preside over a trial where if the president got convicted, the vice president would become the president. But in any case, regardless of who's presiding in the Senate, presiding officer is really nothing more than sort of a convening officer.
So effectively, you're just the Speaker of the House in that sense.
Well, I suppose that's one way of looking at it. I mean, he has the opportunity under the rules, the Chief Justice would, to make provisional rulings on things like the admissibility of evidence. But if any single senator objects, the matter is given to a vote by the Senate, and a majority of the Senate can overrule the Chief Justice on any point whatsoever. So he has really very little actual authority.
And there is a point. There are points at which the Senate can go black, if you like. They shut the doors, television cameras go off, reporters go out, and they can consult in confidence. What are the situations in which that occurs?
Well, the principal one will be the ultimate deliberations, which almost certainly would be conducted behind closed doors, where they actually make the arguments one with the other about, you know, the strength of the evidence and whether the president should be convicted. But there may be other occasions in which they could withdraw into so-called executive session and debate among themselves about particular procedural points without having anybody observe what they're doing.
Now, Mitch McConnell's Democrat counterpart is Chuck Schumer. Does it really matter what Chuck Schumer thinks or wants to do in this situation?
Well, I suppose it matters in a sort of a general political rhetorical sense because, you know, Senator Schumer will be the spokesperson for the position of the Democrats in the Senate, but he has no authority in the matter beyond that.
Democrats have accused the president of abusing the power of office by urging the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, in a July phone call to investigate his political rival Joe Biden and holding military funding hostage. What do the president's lawyers say?
They say a number of things in a rather extended pleading, but none of what they say, frankly, makes a good deal of sense. For example, they're making the unsupportable claim that somehow or other, in order to be impeached under the American Constitution and removed, that you have to have committed an actual statutory crime. That's plainly not the case. They're claiming that...
And some of them are on the record contradicting themselves in the past.
That's certainly true. And beyond that, they're essentially claiming that, the president didn't really do what, frankly, the evidence plainly demonstrates that he did.
Hold on a second. Is there a smoking gun? I mean, I'm watching this pretty closely. Is there any evidence at all that tangibly that that he actually said it? There's no evidence on the ground on this, is there?
Well, in fact, there is. There's the phone call itself.
No, there's the phone call. But he didn't make a threat in the phone call.
Well, come on. I mean, he plainly does. I mean, you can't read the phone call really any other way. And what's more, there's boatloads of evidence from other officials in the Trump administration who did defy the president's orders and actually come forward and testify that, in fact, that the orders to withhold the aid came from the president. Now, it's true, as you seem to be suggesting, that we don't have the testimony, say, from Mick Mulvaney, the White House chief of staff.
Who would have
actually carried out these orders. That's true. But why don't we have that testimony? Because President Trump has refused to allow them to testify. And that, in essence, you've gotten to the core of the dispute this morning. The president is going to defend in part on the claim that there's nobody who can actually say they heard him say, withhold the aid to extort Ukraine. But of course, the one or two or three people who could actually testify to that are... that Trump is preventing from appearing, and the House managers are saying to the Senate, look, if that's the defense, then at least insist that these people come down and tell you whether they heard this or didn't hear it. And if you don't do that, among other things, you're essentially declaring that the Senate itself is completely impotent in the face of presidential defiance of a co-equal branch of government.
I mean, I'm not asking the obvious, given what you've said so far. I mean, you assume, presumably, that he has committed an impeachable offense, but on what basis do you come to that conclusion?
He's committed an obvious abuse of power. He used his constitutionally granted authority as chief diplomat of the United States, as the head of the American military, in a way that was not promoting American interests, but his own private political interests. That's plainly an abuse of power. Abuse of power has been an impeachable offense in an Anglo-American history back to the 14th century, and it was plainly one of the things that most concerned the American framers when they wrote impeachment into the Constitution. In addition, and I think it's critical, Article 2 of the impeachment charges obstruction of Congress's own investigation into the question of whether the president committed impeachable offenses. If a president can simply say to Congress, no, I'm not going to provide the evidence, go whistle, when you're trying to find out if I committed impeachable offenses, then an important part of the American structure of checks and balances, which is that Congress has a responsibility to oversee the executive generally and to make sure that the president in particular hasn't done things wrong personally. If a president can simply say, you can't impeach me because I refuse to provide you the evidence, then indeed we're in great trouble.
So just pursuing that great trouble, I mean, you think the separation of powers under the Constitution is really under threat?
It is.
And I mean, where does it go from here? He's going to be exonerated. So this is, we're spending a lot of time talking about it. It's interesting, but he's going to get exonerated. What happens next in terms of this constitutional crisis, as people like you are framing it?
Well, I mean, he will be exonerated because the majority of the Senate in the form of the Republican Party will almost all vote to acquit him. I think that's probably clear. But then, of course, the real question is ultimately how does this play with the American public? Because the second check against executive overreach in the Constitution is the election itself.
Okay. Well, look, thank you very much for joining us, Frank.
It's been my pleasure.
Frank Bowman is law professor at the University of Missouri and author of the book High Crimes and Misdemeanors, A History of Impeachment for the Age of Trump.